Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Rare is Fundamental podcast, episode 11. So when is Manny Pacquiao going to fight Piston Honda? What's up, internet? This is the Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 11. My name is Ray Moraldi. You also know me as Ray Ray. And this was being recorded on April 30th, 2015. And we're sort of going to jump right into this. My guest for this podcast is Robert Latall, CEO of Black Sports Online. And here's the thing. I had him before on my NBA podcast called The Chronicles of Karate over at the No Look Pass. I feel like I didn't need to talk to him about his beginnings before he did this empire because, I mean, we already talked about it. So what I'm going to do is play that clip from that podcast, and then we're going to get into the interview about the NBA playoffs, WWE, where the NFL is going, and of course, the big fight that is happening this weekend. So here's the clip. Scratch.
And my original concept was, at that time, you know, there wasn't a lot of blogs that were out there. There wasn't even a lot of sports sites in general out there, and there definitely wasn't a lot of black people talking about sports online at that time. And the whole thing that started it was, you know, when Joe Buck kind of went crazy on Randy Moss for the fake mooning in Green Bay.
Right.
And this is a true story. I was actually on a porn message board. Now, I know that sounds bad, but we used to talk sports on this porn, you know, message board in between, you know, downloading the porn and stuff like that. And, you know, during the playoff games, we would, you know, have a thread just for the playoff games, and we'd talk back and forth. It was kind of like, you know, the downgraded version of what Twitter is now. And we're talking on this forum, and Joe Buck goes crazy, and you know, this was a predominantly black porn forum. And they were like, man, we just wish we had someone that could speak about these injustices and talk back to the mainstream media. And I, you know, having my degree from Ohio State, was like, that's a great idea. So I literally got the idea from a porn message board to start Black Sports Online and to, you know, to basically be a voice at that time that just wasn't out there, you know, a voice of not necessarily being, you know, militant or anti-establishment, but at least to show a different perspective on the world of sports. So that's actually how I got started.
Mm-hmm. Did you always want to get into sports media? Was that an idea of yours, or it just came about?
No, it was always, I wanted to either be a rapper or that's true. I wanted to be a rapper or to be on SportsCenter. I mean, those were literally my two dreams, you know, from the time I was, you know, 6 years old. It was like, I was always into sports, but I wasn't I was a decent, you know, like high school player and everything, but I wasn't going to the pros. So I knew if I wanted to be involved with sports, it would have to be in the media some way. So when I went to school, it was very strange. I was going to school at Ohio State, and at the same time, I was trying to do this music and everything. And literally, I think the music kept me in school because my dad was like, hey, I don't care if you rap, I don't care what you do, but you also got to get your, you know, degree if you want to do this other stuff. So I was rapping and going to school. And then, you know, after I graduated, I was like, oh, you know, like most college graduates, I thought I would just find a job in media just like that. Well, it didn't happen that way, you know.
Yeah.
I was working at all type of jobs, Home Depot, Office Max, Macy's. I was working all type of different odd jobs while still trying to rap, and also, you know, while starting up Black Sports Online. So at the time, it was just kind of a thing to do. So I figured if I got a newspaper job or something, I would have something, you know, on my resume. And, you know, I'm as surprised as anyone else that has grown to the level that it's grown to.
What was your rapper name?
It was Michelangelo. Mike Angel for short. Mike Angel putting mics in your chest, you know, so it was like the Angel of Death type of thing with the lyrics. I had a whole little crew and everything going on. There's it's funny that the one hit, local hit that I had, it's actually, the name of the song is called Ichiro. And yes, it is after Ichiro, the the actual baseball player.
Right.
It was a pretty big local hit here. But when I had my daughter, that was pretty much the end of my rap career. I figured I had to get serious about something.
Is it online somewhere?
It is. It is.
Okay.
It is. If you search, you know, if you Google Mike Angel Ichiro, you will find a link that is still active to my surprise.
Guys, never mind the porn noises. Okay, here's a real interview from April 30th. On the line, he's in Chicago right now, but creator of Black Sports Online, and he'll be in Las Vegas tomorrow. Robert Littal, how's it going, man?
Man, it's going well. I mean, it's a busy time in the world of sports. You know, we got the draft, we got NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, and then, you know, this little fight, you know, that's going on, Mayweather-Pacquiao.
I'm going to try to cover as much as I can here in the world of sports, but what are you doing in Chicago?
Well, I'm in Chicago for, I was at Blogs with Balls, which is kind of a sports media conference. I was speaking at that, and that's also, you know, the same time that the first round of the NFL draft is happening, and I'm covering that as well. It's not too far from me because, you know, I'm in St. Louis, so it was a quick little trip, and then I, you know, head off to all of the craziness that's going to be down in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this fight that we're going to be talking about, Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, and part of me is very conflicted about talking about this because of, if in actuality, both fighters' histories, really. First of all, is this too late to be done? I mean, it's 2015, and they've been talking about this fight for like 5 years now, and they finally got it done.
Well,
is it too late?
The situation is this, is that if this fight happens, you know, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, when they're in their prime and Pacquiao hadn't got KO'd, I think the fight would be seen more on a level as a Ali, a Frazier, a, you know, Hagler Hearns, a Leonard Hearns, because they would have been in their prime. So I think what's happening now is the fight, because it happened so late, is generating more money because of the way media is changed with social media and things like that. But it's not going to be seen as, you know, a fight, a legacy type of fight that people will be talking about. You know, 20, 30 years from now, they'll be talking about how much money these guys made, but I don't think they'll be talking about, you know, this was a fight that kind of, you know, changed history. It may have changed financial history, but not actually boxing history.
Nothing's going to be ever bigger than the Super Bowl, but is this the biggest event, sporting event of this year?
Definitely. And I think the difference is that, you know, with the Super Bowl, you know, that's every year. We know it's coming every year. We know it's going to be massive every year. It's, you know, I think, you know, this is going to be 50 that's coming up. When you have, you know, fights like this, this only happens maybe once every 20, 30 years that there's some sort of mega fight that, you know, everybody knows about, that the mainstream and casual fans know about. And then you have these two conflicting personalities. You know, you have, you know, Mayweather, you know, which has various, you know, issues throughout the years. And then you kind of have Pacquiao, which is kind of the international type of flavor with his own issues. But also, you know, he's kind of bigger than life, you know, type. And so you have these two conflicting, you know, personalities, you know, coming together in a fight that nobody, you know, was thinking that was going to happen. And to me, that makes it bigger singularly than, you know, a Super Bowl that happens, you know, every year. So to me, this fight, you know, it's going to be the standard bearer for fights financially and attention-wise for a very, you know, long time. And I don't know when another fight like this with all of the craziness that's been involved will come back around.
What do you think of the charge of the pay-per-view, though? That's $100. I mean, and people are still willing to spend it, too. I mean, wow.
Yeah,
I don't know what to say about that.
When people talk about this fight, I think the one thing they're going to talk about more than anything else is the financial aspects of the fight. You know, if we start seeing, you know, pay-per-views, you know, now move up into the 89, 99, you know, range, people are going to look back and say, oh, that was because when it started with, you know, Mayweather and Pacquiao. You know, it's a capitalist society, and if they know people are going to pay it, you know, they're going to really, you know, try to max it out. You know, when Mayweather fought Oscar De La Hoya, and that was the biggest fight financially up to this time, you know, they did, I think, 2.4 million pay-per-view buys, but the pay-per-view was only $59.99. You know, so if these guys do 3 million, 4 million, 3.5, but they're doubling basically, you know, what they're charging, you know, they're just blowing the financial model, you know, out of the water. And you see things with boxing, and I think UFC and I think going down the road, don't be surprised if pay-per-view prices start going up a little bit, because they see what happened, you know, with Mayweather and Pacquiao.
Before we get into the match itself, I guess a lot of love and a lot of hate at the same time. Obviously, we all know about his domestic violence record. Why did this get swept under the rug for so long?
You know, that's the part that always kind of has bothered me about the situation, is that this happened, you know, several years ago, and he went to jail, and it was a big, you know, national story about him going to jail. And since then, he's fought, you know, four times since then in pretty big events, you know, not as big as this, of course, but pretty big events. And the conversation about his domestic violence history has been very, very light from the mainstream media, even though they have covered these fights before. Now, you know, maybe, you know, of course, I understand it's a much bigger fight. So, you know, these type of things are going to, you know, kind of come out of the woodwork, but I do see it as a bit, you know, hypocritical. It's not like, you know, if you think Floyd Mayweather is a bad guy just over the last 10 days, to me, that's a little strange, because you've known all of this about Floyd Mayweather, you know, over the last 4 or 5, you know, years. It's not like he just started to be this guy, you know, 2 weeks ago, when Stephen A started, you know, hanging out with him. So I think it's a combination. I think people know that it's such a big fight that if they do speak about it, people are going to, you know, listen, they're going to watch, they're going to read about it, because, you know, so many more eyes on it. But I do think it's part, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, it's part PR, part hot take-ish, part, you know, I want to get eyes on me and attention on me, because they've had plenty of time to speak about this in the past.
So do you blame people when they said they're going to boycott this fight?
I mean, here's the thing. If fans want to boycott the fight because they don't like Mayweather or they don't like Pacquiao's stance on gay marriage and everything, to me, you know, that's perfectly fine. I mean, you know, it's their cable bill, it's their money. They can choose to do whatever they want to do. My issue is when networks like Keith Olbermann and other people are telling people to boycott the site when ESPN has like 7 sets at the pool. Like, to me, that doesn't make any, you know, sense to me. You know, like, you're telling fans to boycott while you're the person that's employing you are the people that are promoting the fight more than anybody else. And you're not taking them on. You know, it's totally different to me if Keith Olbermann says fans should boycott the fight and ESPN should not have any coverage, you know, of the fight. They shouldn't be helping promote the fight. They shouldn't be helping promote domestic abusers or whatever it may be. But you don't hear that, you know, from ESPN, or you don't hear that from ESPN people while they're being critical of the fight. And I think that part kind of annoys me. Like, Stephen A. Smith hangs out with Floyd Mayweather. I mean, there's a producer or somebody above Stephen A. Smith that signs off on these segments. And they knew about, you know, Floyd Mayweather domestic violence before they let Stephen A. go hang out in the private jet. And if they wanted him to talk about that, they could have told him to talk about that. They could have alerted Mayweather's people that this was going to be something that they wanted to dig into. And they chose not to do that. You know, they chose to do, you know, their outside the lines and have some other people do it. So to me, like I said, if fans want to feel that way, their money, perfectly fine. I find it, you know, a tad bit hypocritical that networks are high horsing some of the things that Mayweather has done, while also, you know, profiting from the Mayweather fight.
Do you find it strange that some people, okay, they won't separate the person and the athlete? For example, Darren Sharper. Some people actually separate that, like Peter King does.
Mm-hmm.
don't you find it strange that some people don't separate Mayweather the person, Mayweather the athlete?
To me, yeah, I do, because to me it's two different. Everything is two different things. Like, there are a lot of football players out there that's gotten in trouble. You know, Ray Rice, Brandon Marshall, Terrell Suggs. I mean, we can go, you know, on and on about that, and basketball players, you know, as well. But if you're a football fan or you're a basketball fan, you know, you don't have to like a certain player personally to enjoy watching them play. I don't think that's a that means that you agree with what they've done. I can watch Dez Bryant make incredible catches and comment on that and not, you know, be a fan of him slapping or hitting his mother. I mean, I wouldn't hit my mother. I wouldn't want anybody to hit their mother.
Right.
It's two different things to me. So with Mayweather, like, I don't have to be on the money team. I don't have to agree the way that he has a harem of women or his domestic violence, you know, history, or Pacquiao's history with, you know, how he feels about, you know, gay marriage, which I'm very much in favor of, to enjoy their fight, to enjoy that their matches, to be able to critique, you know, what's going on inside of the ring. And I think fans pick and choose what athletes they don't want to separate it from. If they're a Cowboys fan, they're much more likely to just kind of dismiss, you know, what, you know, Dez Bryant, you know, has done in his past. But then on the flip side, sometimes they will take, you know, someone like Floyd Mayweather and say, oh, I can't, you know, watch his fight because he did this to, you know, women. And that's why I see a lot of hypocrisy within media, with fans, and, you know, on social media as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that's why I said I'm kind of conflicted about talking about this, because, like, you know, we know what Floyd Mayweather has done. And also, I'm Filipino. Mm-hmm. Manny Pacquiao is a huge Philippine icon right now. But yet, he's against gay marriage. So I'm just kind of like, oh, man, this is so conflicting. Like, what do I do, you know? It's really tough. And I don't know. Like, I'm, again, a lot of conflict going inside my head. And, of course, I still want to watch a fight. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, ah, I'm so confused, you know?
I think a lot of times it's a, especially on social media, it's a mob mm-hmm. mentality. It's
yes.
like you
yes,
have to take a side. Like, mm-hmm. you can't. You know, be, you know, it's always like black and white, like the gray areas people don't want to understand. And if you take a middle ground, like, you know, if you just say, like you just said, you just are very honest, like you mm-hmm. want to watch the fight, you're conflicted about certain things. I mean, that's human. That's natural. You know, everything is mm-hmm. not going to be, you know, so perfect. You know, you don't have to take 100%. You know, side on everything, and that's okay, because that's not how life is. Life is not, you know, just black and white. There's, you know, like, I feel every time I, you know, cover certain things with certain players, I feel a little uneasy about, you know, certain things, but also, you know, I have a job to do as well. So, you know, there's always confliction, and it's okay to have that. But in our society now, and the way, you know, social media is, and the way the media in general is, and the way fans are, it's like, if you don't take a hard stance, that must mean that you agree with something else. And that's why I'm very careful with tweeting out or Instagram, you know, any social media, because it's very hard sometimes to get your full thoughts out when you only have 140 characters, or you're just making a quick comment, because people are so quick to take your small comment and make it into a bigger, you know, thing. You know, you're saying mm-hmm. something totally, you know, different. And I think the message of what a lot of people are feeling about things gets lost in the vast world of, you know, social media.
Okay, so onto the fight itself. Pacquiao has hand speed. Mayweather has the reach and has great technical defense, which some say is boring, but you can't hit what you can't catch. So, what do you think overall? Mayweather's a favorite. Would it be an upset if Pacquiao wins?
I think it would be a small upset. I wouldn't, you know, it's not like Douglas and Tyson or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that Mayweather has advantages over Pacquiao. You know, he's the bigger guy. He has mm-hmm. the reach advantage. Pacquiao has a lot of trouble. You know, if you want to look at when Pacquiao has ever had trouble with anybody, it's mainly recently has been with Juan Manuel Marquez, who's a expert counterpuncher, a smart fighter in the ring that takes advantage of Pacquiao's mistakes. So, you know, that's kind of the type of fighter that Mayweather is. He's a technical fighter that, you know, takes advantages of mistakes, a great counterpuncher, and a great defensive, you know, fighter. I think Manny's chance to win is all about activity. You know, he has to make Mayweather uncomfortable. He has to throw 60, 70, 80 punches around. He has to outwork Mayweather, who wants to have more of a clinical type of fight. You know, he has to make it into kind of a rough, bullyish. He has to basically be like Madonna, but with a, you know, a little more tactical type of plan. So to that, in that way, it's interesting to me because boxing judges a lot of time will favor activity over accuracy if you're doing enough activity. And I think, you know, their plan, which has been a lot of people plan, you know, with Mayweather, is just to kind of throw a lot of punches, make them uncomfortable, make the judges think that he's being outworked and, you know, try to steal rounds. Now, like I said, a lot of boxers have, that was their plan going in. So much harder to do, you know, easier said than done. But, you know, Pacquiao, at least from a pure talent standpoint, is probably the most talented, complete boxer, you know, that Mayweather has fought in a very, very long time. So, you know, I can see a fight similar to maybe the Cotto fight, where, you know, Cotto had enough boxing skills and enough, you know, bullying skills to make it into an actual interesting and exciting fight. It's just a matter of, you know, will Pacquiao get off enough, and, you know, how much, you know, the judges are going to value that accuracy over the activity.
Mm-hmm. So you get, Mayweather going
to
win.
Yeah, I have Mayweather winning. You know, to me, it's you have to, if you're Pacquiao, you got to come out strong. You have to win rounds early, try to get him in the bank. But to me, you know, when I see Pacquiao and I see his struggles against Marquez, you know, who's a very good, you know, counterpuncher, and then now he's going up against a guy that's a better counterpuncher, and Pacquiao's been susceptible to right hands pretty much his whole career, and Mayweather's best punch is the straight right hand. I see it maybe exciting for the first couple of rounds or so before Mayweather gets the timing down, and then it just becomes your typical, you know, Mayweather, you know, fight.
We'll be right back with more Robert Latall after this break.
Hey, this is Glenn Moore from Cleveland, Ohio, the host of the This Is Awesome Wrestling Show, and you're tuned in to Ray Ray is Fundamental, probably the best podcast on the West Coast, if not the whole USA.
You flatter me, Glenn. Fair, since I ran out for a while here, but Manny Pacquiao, don't you find it a little funny that he's doing so many activities besides this, besides boxing? He's a congressman, for crying out loud, and he plays professional basketball.
You know, I think Manny gets bored, let's put it like that, and uh-huh. Boxing, and I can understand that because a lot of his opponents lately really hasn't put him up for a challenge. I think he's only really been challenged, you know, mentally to get up for a fight with Marquez. And, you know, fighting the Algieris and the Bradleys and the Rioses of the world is not really something that gets him up, you know, for a fight, mm-hmm. because he can beat those guys on his, you know, worst day. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, fighting Mayweather, if there was anything that, you know, was going to get him motivated to, you know, get in the best shape of his life and, you know, be totally focused on the fight, it would be Floyd Mayweather. So I think we're going to get the best Manny that we've seen in a very long time. It's just a matter of if the best Manny can beat the best Mayweather, you know, on their best days, at this point in their careers.
Mm-hmm. Just so you know, in the Philippines, because I lived there for 6 years, this is how it goes. And I think Manny Pacquiao will eventually become president of the Philippines, but they usually start as an athlete, then they go to acting, then they go to politics.
Mm.
It's so weird. Like a lot of politicians in the Philippines have ended up either from, you know, they have an athletic background or an acting background. One of the presidents before, Joseph Estrada, who was impeached a few years ago, was an actor. When I was in the Philippines, he was an actor. And then 15 years later, he became president. It's so weird, but that's how it works in the Philippines.
I think, you know, man, you know, I make fun of Manny's, you know, singing and stuff like that. But
he definitely has
a entertainment flair, you know, to him. And let me just, we talked about, you know, their some of their bad things that, you know, we don't agree with, you know, on a personal level. But, like, Manny's the nicest guy, one of the nicest, you know, athletes, you know, that I've ever, you know, met. You know, never a bad word for anybody. Always nice, hospitable. It's like the opposite of Bob Arum and Freddie Roach, you know, like, you know, they're kind of the bombastic, you know, cursing, getting on people's nerves type of people. And he's just kind of there and smiling and being happy and everything like that. So that's the thing that I always try to tell people is like, you can disagree with, some of the things that they do off, you know, out of the ring and stuff like that. But, you know, that doesn't, you know, everybody's not going to agree with everything that you do, and you can still be a nice person or, you know, a good person surrounding that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you ever watch a Filipino channel, basically, like there is here in America, Manny Pacquiao would, I remember he just suddenly appeared out of nowhere in a variety show, which the Philippines has a lot of. And then suddenly he was dancing with the dancers over there. I'm just like, oh my god, I guess he's not doing anything today. So he's everywhere in the Philippines, man. He is everywhere. He's a Filipino icon. And a lot of Filipino families will just have all these gatherings just because there's a Manny Pacquiao pay-per-view fight.
You know, I'm curious to see when I get to Vegas. I mean, because I know the Instagram models and the, you know, you know, my people are going to be there, you know, doing crazy. But one of the things that you get when you go to fights that you don't get when you go to, like, you know, NBA All-Stars or drafts or stuff like that, is such an international flavor of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm from St. Louis, and, you know, there's not a lot of international people in St. Louis. So covering sports has been my way to, you know, meet and talk to people from other country. So, you know, I'm interested to see how many Filipinos have come down. I know Manny's very big with the Mexican Latino community, and so a lot of those people come down from LA and then the, you know, West Coast to the fight. And I like talking, you know, to those people because it's, like you said, it's a totally different culture. The way they, you know, feel about Manny, you know, to me, you know, it's like how people, you know, here feel about Michael Jordan and stuff like that. So that part to me is always a interesting fight, you know, interesting thing when you go to fights, that I always tell people that don't cover boxing, something that, you know, if they never covered a boxing event before, that's one of the coolest things, you know, to talk to Filipino media or talk to just fans and stuff. When he fought Ricky Hatton, all these people from Britain came down, and they were like literally the coolest people. Like, it made me want to move to England. It was like the coolest thing, you know, to see. And they had the accent, and they're drinking, and they're buying, you know, beers for everybody. And they were just like the nicest people of all time. So it's going to be an interesting mix, you know, if you just take away the boxing aspect. You know, you're going to have all of these high rollers and Vegas people, but then you're going to have this international mix with kind of the hip hop urban crowd, and I think that's going to be cool to see how that, you know, kind of all interacts.
Mm-hmm. Is boxing? I mean, people have been saying how boxing is dead. Like, is it really dead?
No. Boxing has never been dead because here's the thing about boxing is a sport that is not just American based. You know, it's worldwide. So, and, you know, to me, that's one of the things why, you know, UFC, they're doing great, but, you know, they haven't quite caught up to boxing. I mean, when, you know, you see a fight over in Germany and it's a 40,000 seat, you know, arena that's filled, or in England, you know, they could do 80,000, you know, people. And even in America, you know, when Mayweather or Pacquiao fights, you know, it's you see how it takes over kind of the news, you know, cycle. So I don't think boxing is dead. I think boxing, at least in the States, you know, we're so caught up in the heavyweights, and we haven't had a Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield for, you know, 20, 25 years. So these smaller, you know, weight classes, they've been booming overseas and, you know, with the boxing community, but not with the mainstream, you know, public, because, you know, our biggest American guy is basically Floyd, you know, Mayweather. He's a smaller weight, and he really hasn't captured the full, you know, grasp of American culture. But I think you're seeing a small shift. You have Al Haymon now putting on all of these boxing events on free TV, you know, CBS, NBC, the cable channels, ESPN, Spike and stuff. And it's coming at the same time that Mayweather and Pacquiao is coming out. So I don't think boxing has ever been dead. I think in America, it just hasn't been on the radar as much as it has been overseas. But the sport as a whole is still obviously doing well. I mean, what other sport can a guy make $200 million in 48, you know, minutes, you know, saying that it goes the distance. So it's, you know, financially it's doing, you know, perfectly fine. You know, these guys, boxing guys get paid, you know, 5-10 times more than UFC guys, get paid, you know, not the big people, but, you know, like, you know, Adrian Broner, who would be like a middle-class UFC guy, gets, you know, $1 million for a fight, where that middle-class UFC guy is maybe getting 50, 60, you know, thousand. So financially, right, he's doing great, and, you know, I don't think it's ever been dead. It's kind of like when they say hip-hop is dead. You know, it's just kind of a cool thing, you know, a weird thing to say, but it's not actually true.
Mm-hmm. What does the UFC have to do to catch up? Their face right now is a woman, Ronda Rousey.
UFC, here's the thing, boxing has been around, you know, since the 1800s. I mean, you know, it's, you know, this is more than, you know, 100, you know, years, in, you know, in the making. You know, you can't take over a sport, you know, in 15 years. You know, it takes time. I think they just have to keep doing, you know, what they're doing. I think, you know, they have to keep finding stars, and they have to, you know, expand, you know, more or less. So I think they're not going to catch up with boxing overnight or even any type of major sport. But I think what's happened is they have established a niche. They have a very rabid, you know, fan base. Now, the thing about it is you have to watch out, you know, for these John Jones's type of situations where, you know, the guys that are their main people, you know, are cokeheads and getting in trouble, you know, all the time. But right. I think, you know, if they keep putting on, I think the one thing that UFC has over boxing is boxing has so many promoters and network issues that a lot of times, as we see now, you know, it's very hard to put on fights that everybody wants to see. UFC normally doesn't have that problem. UFC, the main guys is, it's one guy that's the matchmaker. You're going to fight him if that's what he wants to fight. It's almost like the WWE in that they make, you know, the matches. So if they keep putting on the people that everybody wants to see, I think a lot of the boxing fans that get frustrated with matchups not being made because of politics will blend right over to the UFC because the biggest guys, the main fighters are fighting each other.
You mentioned WWE, and you wanted to come on early, like a few weeks ago, because AJ Lee left WWE, but you're a big defender of wrestling. You wrote a entry on your site defending wrestling fans. It's so funny. Why do you think people are just so against this thing?
I have no idea. We live in a society sometimes where people don't like other people to be happy. Like they want to throw a wet blanket on anything that people like to enjoy. Like, well, here's what, you know, somebody made a perfect example. It's like the guys or girls that are getting on wrestling fans, if you watch The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones or pretty much anything, Daredevil or whatever you watch, you know, the Avengers, Spider-Man, whatever, you know, that's not, you know, real, you know.
Yeah.
Daredevil, you know, is not gonna, you know, there's not a guy out there beating up like, you know, blind guy that's beating up like 20 dudes. And that's not real. It's entertainment. And you suspend your disbelief or you suspend your belief because you want to be entertained and you like the story and stuff like that. Wrestling is just a live soap opera with acrobatics and stuff like that. These are tremendous athletes that are doing fun things and doing crazy things and stuff. And, you know, it's a part of entertainment. And that's why it's the WWE. That's what the E is actually for. But even beyond that, what I do or what the wrestling fans do should be of no concern to what you like, you know, and part I just don't get. I don't get, you know, Colin Cowherd and all these people, you know, they make these stereotypes and assumptions, you know, that wrestling fans, you know, were, you know, all fat and in my mom's basement and stuff like that, where anybody that's been to a wrestling event, and, you know, I've been to a few, and I'm sure you've been to some.
Yes.
You know, there's just normal people, you know, and there's some hot chicks there, too. I'll point that out, you know, for all of the people that want to say that. There's a lot of hot women that go to WWE events. So, you know, I don't know where they got that part, you know, from, but, you know, that's true. And I just, you know, sometimes, like I said, instead of just tweeting out what I feel is, I like to write these kind of editorials to let people know that, hey, you know, this is stupid. You know, let these people enjoy WrestleMania. Let these people talk about, you know, the New Day or John Cena, because it's fun. And we are in a society that's so serious. They have a lot of problems, you know, riots and cops and racism and politics. And we have so much bad stuff going on in our society. We need some stuff like, you know, John Cena kicking out of 700, you know, finishers and that. We need stuff that's lighthearted, you know, to kind of make us not go crazy. And, you know, like I said, people, for whatever reason, there's just a lot of negativity online and in our society, and it just bothers me, and that's why, you know, I wanted to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. So what do you look for? Who's your favorite wrestler these days?
My favorite wrestler is Daniel Bryan these days. He can't stay healthy, but he's been my favorite wrestler for a couple of years so. Big fan of Randy Orton and Seth Rollins. Mm-hmm. Now I like Rusev. Obviously, I did like AJ Lee into CM Punk. You know, I want Dana White to put me in the ring with CM Punk, because I'm still hurting over the stuff with AJ Lee. I think they have a lot of good young guys coming up. You know, I like Neville. I always liked him in NXT, and he's come in and he's done well. That I actually like the New Day. You know, gotta have the brothers, you know, doing something. Looks like they found their stride. So I like a lot of the people, in the WWE now. And I try to watch some of the other wrestling, the lucha stuff and keep up with it as best that I can, because it's something that is kind of an escape for reality.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little troubled with the way WWE uses, African Americans sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's either super happy or super angry.
Right.
What do you think about that?
I mean, it's been like that since
I know.
Coco Beware, when I was watching him as a kid. It's
right.
I think a lot of the WWE characters are based off stereotypes. You know, that was a lot with like the Mexican wrestlers for a very long time. And I think Vince McMahon, you know, I don't think he's racist. What I think is he's stubborn. And he feels like, you know, the champion has to look a certain way. You know, Mexican wrestlers have to wrestle a certain way. Black wrestlers have to be a certain way. It's hard to get him to think, you know, outside of the box. You know, that's why Daniel Bryan didn't get a push for such a long time, because he was small and elfish looking. And, you know, he doesn't think that he could be a champion. And mm-hmm. Vince has these stereotypes about wrestling, which, you know, because he's been in the business for so long, it's very hard for him to get. The whole thing with the New Day was people was like, yeah, they should be a badass, you know, stable. You know, they could be like the Nation of Domination or something. But, of course, the writers of Vince was like, no, black people have to be happy and talk like preachers or whatever. And that's how he started it. And it took the one thing I do like about the WWE now is the fans will dictate what should mm-hmm. happen. And they totally was like, no, we don't want that from the New Day. And it was because of that they kind of subtly changed their thing from being so stupid to something that's a little more in-depth and a little more complex. And now people are kind of getting, you know, with it. So I think Vince, not racist, just very stubborn and
out of touch, maybe.
Yeah, just a little out of touch. I think Triple H has a little bit more feel of what people like in 2015. And it's so funny because all of the characters that have gotten over in the WWE have gotten over because basically they took what Vince wanted them to do and ignored it and just was themselves, you know, be it mm-hmm. The Rock, be it Stone Cold, be it Triple H, be it Shawn Michaels. All of these guys, just even Daniel Bryan and to this day, and even John Cena a little bit, they took what Vince McMahon wanted them to do, and basically that didn't work, and then they just became themselves, and then they got over. So you would think that Vince would understand that the way to get over is just let people be themselves and be an extension, their character be an extension of their own, you know, personality. Like when I see Randy Orton, I think Randy's a little off. Like, I've always thought Randy was a little off. And that kind of comes out in his, you know, character, where you don't really know if that's, like, he's acting or he just, like, kind of really, you know, is like that. And I think that's where they got off the track with Roman Reigns, is they tried to make him into something, you know, that he wasn't. And people rejected it. And they're only going to accept Roman when he acts the way that, you know, he wants to act. And it sometimes Vince has to, you know, be shown that the hard way. And luckily the fans and the WWE writers that are very vocal on social media and on their blogs kind of help, you know, push him along to that.
Yeah. And by the way, The Rock was one of the African-Americans that basically broke that mold.
Exactly. You know? Remember, they tried to make The Rock into Rocky Maivia and, you know, the Golden Boy and all of that stuff.
Super happy.
Yeah, he's a happy guy, and it didn't work. And The Rock went to the U. I mean, he went to Miami. Of course he's going to have swagger and all of that stuff. So that just had to be let out. And as soon as that's let out, and people see it as authentic. And that doesn't matter. Whatever sport it is, when you're authentic and people feel that you're being real, even if you're acting or whatever, it's going to go better. You know, the athletes that we like in sports are the ones that we feel that aren't, you know, fake. You know, they're just being themselves. And that kind of comes across in the WWE.
All right, so talk about NFL really quick. It was hard for me to watch last year. This is probably the most football I've missed last season because of the whole Ray Rice thing and the Roger Goodell thing. Do you think NFL is going to go on a decline, or is it just too powerful that they can't withstand anything?
You know, we talked about earlier separating personal from, you know, the field. And I think the NFL is a great example of that, because I think no one is overly happy with Roger Goodell, with the way that they handled a lot of stuff, you know, last year, be it domestic abuse, be it, you know, how they punished people, how they reacted to certain things. I don't think anybody agreed with that or liked it or was comfortable with it. But we all watched, I should say the majority of the people didn't leave the sport, because on the field, the product is to me getting, you know, better than ever. You know, it's high scoring. It's, you know, it's had some issues with the refs and stuff like that, but it's still an amazing game, to watch, and it's drama filled, and we have our favorite teams and favorite players. So people have been able to separate those two. So I don't think the product on the field, at least for now, has taken a hit. The reputation off the field of the NFL as a business, I think, has taken a hit. But do they even care, because the on-field hasn't taken a hit? Like, you know, do they care that people don't – does Roger Goodell care that people don't like him, or the way that he handled things, because he's still getting paid and the ratings are still as high as they could be? The only way, to me, you force people to make change is if you hit their pocketbook, and that's not happening with the NFL right now. So I don't think it's on a decline. I think people are just more aware of the business side, and, you know, they don't take the NFL at their word. You know, they're more, you know, intelligent about what's going on behind the scenes. But when it's kickoff, you know, all of that kind of goes to the backside.
This podcast is really long, guys. But anyway, we'll have one more segment of Robert Atal after this.
Hey there, folks. It's your girl, Jackie Mesa Pepper from PepperOnSports.com, and you're listening to the Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast. Little fact about your host, Ray Ray. Did you know that he's actually the certified king of karaoke? I bet if you ask nicely, he may just sing you a little song.
Listen to the one in the gutter, one, get around and I'm troublesome, extra double.
I just got a text from my phone that Oklahoma City Thunder has hired Billy Donovan.
Yes, I saw that.
What do you think?
I think Billy Donovan has 1 year. Okay, that it didn't matter who the coach was. He has 1 year to figure out a way, you know, assuming that they're both healthy, Russ and KD, to figure out a way to get both of these, you know, one guy that's won the MVP, one guy that's a MVP candidate, to figure out a way to blend these two guys together, the best of them, and make a run, you know, for the title. Because I honestly think if it doesn't go well, I think KD's going to leave. If they can't figure out a way to work together, I think he's going to go to DC or wherever else. I think he's going to leave. And then I think if KD leaves, I think Westbrook will be right out the door after him. And then Billy Donovan is going to have a team that doesn't have any superstars on it. I like what Billy Donovan did in Florida. You never know what these college coaches are going to be like when they hit the pros. I mean, you just don't know how it's going to work. It's a lot of pressure on them. OKC did not consult with, you know, KD or Westbrook about this, even though I don't think they would have a big issue with it as long as it works. So to me, OKC becomes one of the most interesting subplots of the, you know, next year, because everybody's going to want to know, and it's going to be like LeBron in his last year with, you know, Cleveland, before he went to Miami, and, you know, if he's going to be able to pull this all together, or is he going to leave? So, good luck to Billy Donovan. I'm sure he's gotten paid, but it's not a stable situation right now.
Scott Brooks is often criticized on social media, but I thought he got a raw deal when he got fired. You agree with me?
I think if they fired him because of this year, I mean, I don't think they made a point of saying it was over a, you know, a period of time that they fired him. But my thing with Scott Brooks was this. It's twofold to me. I think he could have done better trying to mesh KD and Westbrook together. But with that being said, the GM is the one that shipped off Harden and didn't give them the proper secondary pieces to go along with their two superstars. And I think that's nothing that Scott Brooks, you know, could fix. You know, you can't fix, you know, when you don't have a good supporting cast. That's the GM. You can't fix injuries. So, you know, when Westbrook gets hurt the playoffs last year and KD gets hurt, you know, before the playoffs this year, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're Phil Jackson or Pat Riley. You can't, you know, get over, you know, that. So should he have been given that? I think it would have been better to give him one more year because you have an unknown with KD and Westbrook. Give him that one more year. See what happens. And then if you know that Kevin Durant is like, hey, I'm leaving unless you get coach XYZ. Now you can bring in a coach that KD wants that possibly keeps him there, as opposed to now you just kind of brought in the guy you wanted and you have no assurances that, you know, Durant is going to stay.
I think that's the thing about Sam Presti. I think he reacts a year too early with the James Harden deal. I thought he should have held on to him for one more year because I know he wasn't going to hold on to him because he would want a lot of money and he's not going to take a third man role. And for this one, I thought he should have held on to Scott Brooks because the last 3 years they've been hit with injuries. 2013 with Westbrook, 2014 with Ibaka, and then this year with Kevin Durant. So, yeah, I thought it was a raw deal, but what can you do, right?
Well, I mean, I think it was a reactionary move. Like, they felt like they had to do it. But like you said, I think it's a year too early. Too early,
yeah.
You know, like, especially with the heart, like, they could have waited that out and maybe gotten better pieces to their trade, you know, him. They had him under contract. He didn't have to go. You know, you just let him go. And like I said, the GMs never fire themselves. They always fire the coach. But his track record of handling things have not been great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So the NBA playoffs are going on. Conference semifinals are coming up. A month before the playoffs started, I thought, oh, the West from 1-7 could win the title, and then injuries hit. And now all it seems like to me is that the title contenders that are left are the Spurs, the Warriors, and the Cavs. What do you think of this picture?
I think you remember how back in the day, when the Cowboys and the 49ers, would face off, in the NFC Championship game and they would say that was a real Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I feel like about the Western Conference, right now. I feel like because of the Kevin Love injury, I don't think, you know, LeBron and Kyrie and the rest of the people that they got are enough to be any type of top tier Western Conference, you know, team. So, you know, if it's the Warriors, the Rockets, the San Antonio, you know, say the Clippers came back or whatever, they get out of that. I think, not saying it'd be a cakewalk, but I think they're the prohibited favorites, you know, for the title. The East is just not very strong. I can see an upset though. I mean, I can see a situation where, if, let's say, Chicago finally gets past Milwaukee, where they get up, really up for, you know, the Cavs and beat them. Or, you know, I can see, you know, the Wizards, you know, getting on a run and you get like this very weak, Eastern Conference team, you know, going against high powered team like the Warriors or a very experienced team like the Spurs. And, you know, they just get, you know, kind of whitewashed, you know, through this. So, you know, I think from this point on, I think, you know, you're trying to see what's going to happen, in the West. I can honestly see a situation where the Spurs, you know, the Clippers be their, you know, most challenging, you know, series if they really kind of get clicking, with that right now. I don't want to count the Clippers out until, you know, they're actually out, but, you know, I can see the Spurs getting on another little mini, run and, you know, and when, you know, they have that experience that you just can't, you know, you can't equate anything to. But I do think it's going to be the Warriors. I think they just had the better team. They had a younger team. They have the players, that don't look like they're too, you know, they're not getting caught up in the moment, as much. And, you know, I just see it where the finals may be a bit anticlimactic. It'd be good if LeBron is in the finals because that always generates a lot of conversation, no matter if he wins or loses. So, you know, I'm pretty sure the TV people and stuff like that would much prefer, even a wounded Cavs than a Wizards or a Chicago or, you know, a Hawks or whatever. So we'll see what happens, but I think that whoever comes out of the West is going to be a really huge favorite.
Fans are always nostalgic about their 90s NBA, but I think the NBA is better than ever. What do you think?
No, I like where the NBA is at right now because we have all these young players that are coming into their prime. And even some of the older, you know, players that used to be young, like the LeBrons, are still playing, you know, very well. So you still have your LeBron James, you still have your Tim Duncans that are hanging around and out there. But then you have these new faces. You have the Steph Currys, you have the James Hardens, you have the Anthony Davises, and you see all of this potential, you know, and the John Walls and all of this. You see all of this and it makes you feel like, you know, the NBA is going to be in good hands, because at some point, you know, just like Kobe got old, you know, LeBron's going to get old. D Wade, you know, got old. You know, Tim Duncan is old. You know, Carmelo is old. You know, these guys, you know, are going to get old, and then the James Hardens and the Steph Currys and the Klay Thompsons and all of these guys and Anthony Davis is, they're going to be in their prime and it's going to be their time. And for some of these guys, their time may be right, now. And I like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like that the NBA, you know, a lot, everybody was like, you know, the NBA was going to fall apart, you know, post Jordan. But, you know, we had Shaq and Kobe. We had, you know, LeBron come up. We had these people, you know, come through and now we got new people coming through. And that's always going to be, like that. You know, we have Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, then, you know, we get Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and, you know, maybe the next tier is coming up as well. It's always going to be somebody, you know, else, you know, and people are going to be nostalgic, and I'm getting older myself. Like, I come from the Kobe era. So, you know, yeah, I'm nostalgic to Kobe and Shaq and those type of guys, you know, but I like seeing these young guys come up, even if they dress weird. You know, I like seeing these new guys come in, and I think the NBA is on the upswing, to be honest with you.
Do you like the product right now? It's more three-pointers, pace and space, instead of, like, centers dominating in the 90s. Do you like this one better?
I like teams like, you know, the Warriors. I like up-tempo, YOLO threes, you know, crazy shots. Mm-hmm. You know, I liked it. I mean, I was never a big fan of the, like, you know, I respect, like, with the Pistons and things, but I was never, or the Knicks, remember the Knicks and the Heat, like, back in the day, the Alonzo Mourning, you know, Patrick Ewing. I was never a big fan of, like, the kind of the rollerball type of, you know, basketball. Like, it had a place, and that's what you had to do to win. I prefer Showtime-ish type of stuff, and I think we're seeing a lot of that in the playoffs. We're seeing a lot of 100-point games, a lot of free-flowing games, a lot of good offense. And stuff like that. That's why I always say people would say the Spurs are boring. You know, that was always dumb to me. I mean, they're a very free flowing, offense, that scores a lot of points and stuff. So I'm glad that it's going back, you know, toward that. And I think you're seeing more, you're seeing more threes, but you're also seeing a lot of more creativity off the dribble, a lot of different type of moves. So it's not as much post, but it's a little more, skate, playground. Ish type of stuff, you know. When you see Steph Curry, some of the stuff is like Globetrotter, you know, ish, you know. And I like that. It's fun, and I'm a big proponent of let's have fun, let's be a fun right. You know, society, a fun sports, and you know, no matter what the sport is. So you know, I'm down for that.
As our good friend Nate Jones said yesterday, we take sports way too seriously sometimes.
Right.
So, one last thing, advice you want to give to young up and coming bloggers that are doing this, what advice you want to give them?
The man, it's such a different world.
It is now. Yeah. Even when I first came in, 7 years ago, it's like, it was a different, thing back then. And now it's like, there's so much, everyone's media now these days.
Exactly. I don't want to say the market is flooded, but you have to, you know, like you said, back 7 years ago, it wasn't as many people, so it was easier to kind of make a mark, so to speak. These days, it's so much harder because even the people, you know, there's Twitter celebrities, there's Instagram celebrities. Like, you don't even have to have a site anymore to become like an activist or, you know, become somebody, you know, famous. You know, like the guy, like the PFT commenter or something, you know, they can become famous, like, you know, or not famous, but they become known just from, you know, accounts now. So, you know, my advice is actually, and it's kind of weird because it's kind of going in reverse, is to go back to a more traditional style of getting yourself into the media. You know, if you're very young, if you go to college, you know, get a journalism degree, you know. Work for, you know, actually, you know, you can start your blog at any time, but go work for a radio station, go work for a newspaper, go intern at your local TV station, make connections in the industry, while you're doing your blog and stuff, and make sure that you are doing unique, content. We're in a visual age now, maybe even more so than a print, like, you know, we used to be. So, you know, do YouTubes, do Periscopes, do live streams, do quick 30-second vines or Twitter videos. Do whatever you can to get your face and your voice and your words out there. You know, the days of writing 2 or 3 posts a day and thinking that you're going to make a mark are over when people are tweeting 100 and 200 times a day about everything that's going on in the world. So work. You got to work, you know, on this. It has to be something that you have a passion for, that you have a plan for. You can't just sit at home at your computer all day. You have to go outside. You have to meet people. You have to network. You have to work behind the scenes. You have to try to get into stuff. You have to make, you know, these connections. And you really have to have a super passion about it because there are people out here now that they have a passion and they're going to do whatever they need to do to succeed in the industry. Now, there's a lot more outlets, so there should be a lot more opportunities for you to write for sites or do things for sites. So you have to pitch yourself. You know, you have to be your number one fan and your number one pitch man to get yourself out there and not just think people are going to come to you because you're so cool. There's a million cool people out there. You have to show them, you know, why, you know, they should be interested in you.
Robert, you've done a lot for me. You've done a lot for the people. I know you joke about it, but, you know, you've done a lot for the people. You've done some great media coverage of basically every sport. So I want to thank you for coming on, and I've always liked your work, and hopefully we can do this again sometime, all right?
Thank you so much. You know, once again, let me – the vent about AJ Lee, that was – you know, I appreciate that.
Oh.
And, you know, I love your podcast, and I always tell people, you know, go get it. It's been one of the things that's been consistent over the years, and you give people an opportunity to speak that, you know, maybe mainstream wouldn't give an opportunity to speak to, and that's a really big deal, especially to, you know, how I feel about, you know, certain things. So keep doing what you're doing. And I will definitely make sure I will continue to keep promoting you as much as I possibly can. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you to Robert Latall for coming on. Black Sports Online, check it out. Follow him on Twitter at BSO. He'll be sure to provide coverage of the fight this weekend. And if you don't want to watch, more power to you. I totally get it. I really do. In the meantime, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show at RayRay.net. And you can find this podcast on Stitcher as well. Follow the podcast on Twitter at RayRayIsFun, or you can follow me on my personal account, The No Look Pass. By the way, you can also get your NBA playoff coverage at TheNoLookPass.com. Gal Pal Squad, thanks for taking care of me. You people, thanks for listening. Portland, I love you. Southern California, I still love you. And don't forget, RayRay is fundamental, and you don't need a library card to check me out. Until the next episode, party people. Moded.